Hello and welcome to the InternetCases.com podcast, coming to you in MP3 from Chicago, Illinois, USA for Friday, March 4th, 2005. I'm your host, Evan Brown, and I'm the author of the weblog found at InternetCases.com. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you'll find the next few minutes to be informative. First off, probably the biggest news from the past week dealing with the law and the Internet comes from the Federal Circuit's decision on March 2nd in the patent infringement case of Aeolus versus Microsoft. This case had a mixed ruling, with part of the district court's decision being affirmed, parts of it being reversed, and the whole thing sent back to the Northern District of Illinois for a new trial. As if patent law isn't confusing enough, both sides have claimed victory in the decision. What does seem clear is that a decision in Microsoft's favor would probably be less likely to cause disruption in the operability of web browsers and plugins. I've linked to David Crouch's summary of the case that he has on the Patently O blog in a March 3rd posting on InternetCases.com. So if you're interested in learning more about the Aeolus versus Microsoft case, this patent infringement case, I would encourage you to check that out. I'd like to spend a little bit of time this week talking with you about a cyber squatting case from a federal court in Massachusetts, which you may have read about in a post on InternetCases.com this past week entitled "Court Orders Truck Driver to Deliver Domain Name." The case was called Harrison versus Microfinancial. It's a pretty straightforward domain name dispute under a portion of the Lanham Act known as the Anti-Cyber Squatting Consumer Protection Act, known in shorthand as the ACPA. And the case sheds a little bit more light on the factors that a court will consider in determining whether a domain name has been registered in bad faith. In this case, the procedural alignment of the parties was a bit different than usual. Most times it's the defendant that's the cyber squatter, but in this case it was the plaintiff, Harrison. Harrison, who is a retired truck driver, and for some reason the court found it important to mention this, became unhappy with the terms of a business arrangement he had made with a company called LeaseCom. And in retaliation, Harrison registered the domain name leasecom.org. He established a site at leasecom.org that was critical of LeaseCom and its parent company, Microfinancial. Because of this, Microfinancial commenced a World Intellectual Property Organization, also known as WIPO, arbitration under the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. In that arbitration, Microfinancial won, and the WIPO panel ordered the domain name transferred. Well, Harrison would have none of that, and before the domain name could be transferred, as the WIPO panel had ordered, Harrison filed this suit in federal court to enjoin the transfer. Microfinancial, being convinced that Harrison's registration of the domain name was improper, counterclaimed under the ACPA, and both parties moved for summary judgment. The court granted Microfinancial's motion, and it held that Harrison had a bad faith intent to profit from the use of the LeaseCom mark. Congress has made it pretty easy for courts determining whether a domain name has been registered in bad faith by setting out 9 non-exhaustive factors to consider. Now, I'm not going to go through all 9 of those factors here on this podcast, but the case lists out the 9 factors, and you can, of course, go to the provision in the Lanham Act that sets these out. It's 15 U.S.C. 1125D. But among the factors that a court will consider in determining whether a domain name has been registered in bad faith is, it takes into consideration what trademark rights the registrant of the domain name may have in the mark comprising the domain name. The court may take into consideration the registrant's prior use of the domain name in connection with a bona fide offering for sale of goods or services at the website. It may also consider things such as the registrant's intent to divert customers of the rightful owner of the mark, to divert customers from the rightful owner's website. In this case, the court considered one factor to be the most important, and it goes as follows. Harrison had offered to quote-unquote, give the leasecom.org domain name back to Microfinancial in return for Microfinancial's compliance with various of Harrison's demands, including refunding money that Microfinancial had allegedly stolen from victims all across the country. And Harrison also wanted Microfinancial to write letters of apology. He also wanted Microfinancial to reimburse him for the $35 he'd spent on registering the domain name. And when confronted with this in court, Harrison claimed that his offer to transfer the domain name in exchange for all this compliance was merely rhetorical and polemical, and it didn't evidence a serious offer to make a deal. So Harrison was trying to argue that he hadn't tried to really sell the domain name back. Now, the court didn't buy Harrison's argument, and it found that it was clear that Harrison had sought to use the domain name as leverage to get some financial benefit. And given all this, the court, in awarding summary judgment in Microfinancial's favor, concluded that no reasonable jury would have been able to find that Harrison did not have a bad faith intent to profit from his use of the domain name. So the message to would-be cyber squatters becomes clear with each one of these cases that comes down. If you're mad at a company, the way to get back at it is not by registering a domain name that is confusingly similar to the company's trademarks and then trying to sell it back. It's just becoming clearer all the time that that just is not going to work. Well, that about does it for this week's podcast. I certainly do appreciate your listening. Your comments, of course, are always welcome at ebrown@internetcases.com. The music you've heard in this podcast is from a song called Same Difference by an artist named Blandy, and it's courtesy of a Creative Commons license. You can learn more about the artist by going to creativecommons.org and doing a search for Blandy. Remember, all that I've said here is merely for your information and entertainment. If you need legal advice, please be sure to consult with an attorney in person. Talk to you again next week here at InternetCases.com.